Isaiah that I've been doing is one, to me, one of the most interesting series that I've conducted, and it has a very broad impetus, but it corresponds a lot to what the Lord had to say. I've been talking about Messiah, Christ in Isaiah. This is end times in Isaiah, and I thought I'd present it for the Sunday school class. The Lord had something to say to Israel just before he took her into Babylonian captivity. But he also has the same message for Israel just before he puts her through the tribulation period, where she is to be refined, and she is to go through the fire of refinement like you take silver. And when you take the silver and you purify it, you subject it to heat, and as the heat melts the silver, the lead is taken out. And the silver is purified. It means it takes away the part that's undesirable and keeps the part, the silver, that is desirable. Now, in Isaiah 1:25, it says, "And I will turn my hand upon thee," referring to Israel, "and purely," I'll make you pure, "and purely purge away thy dross and take away all thy tin." Now, the word tin here is a translation by the King James translators. And it really isn't tin as we understand it in a tin can. It's lead. And that's what this is. It's lead. And the dross is what causes silver to be dull and unattractive. And once you take away the dross, the things that are impure in it, you take away the lead out of it, it's a very beautiful metal and very precious and highly sought after. So he's talking to Israel about something that's going to happen in the last days, and Isaiah in 1:25 says, "And I will turn my hand upon thee," meaning to purify you, "and purely purge away thy dross and take away all thy tin." This is about to happen. Within the next 6 years, I am firmly convinced that you will see an attack from the north by Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria. I'm convinced of it within the next 6 years. If that's time setting, suppose I'm guilty of it, but I believe within the next 6 years, you will see the attack come from the north. And this is going to be the purging that God allows Israel's enemies to remove the dross from her. Now, Israel is a secular nation for all practical purposes. It was a nation that was founded not so much on returning to the land for religious purposes. It was a nation that wanted to go back home and just be a nation. I would say that most of the people in Israel, well, I won't say most of them, I'll say a lot of them, are secular, and the number is growing. That means they do not worship in the temple, not in the temple, but they do not worship at the synagogue, and it means that they are not of the Orthodox faith. Now, many of them do not even believe there's a God. I've talked to quite a few young men and women that are in the army while I've made my trips there, and many of them do not even believe there's a God. And the guide that we had is a secular Jew. I like the fellow. He's an excellent guide, so I usually use him when I go over there and take a group. But Israel is in worse shape now than she has ever been spiritually in all of her history. Just before God took her into Babylonian captivity, she was in a horrible state. She had lost hope in the Messiah. She wasn't looking for the Messiah. And it's pretty much that way over there right now. And a lot of them don't even believe in God. So they're going to go through a purging. And here's the purging. This is where he purifies Israel, melts her down, and gets rid of all the things in Israel that are displeasing to him. And this is going to happen within the next 6 years. Zechariah 13:8-14:2. Now bear in mind, he said, "I will turn my hand upon thee and purely purge away thy dross and take away thy tin." Zechariah 13:8-14:2. "And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts shall be cut off and die." That's the dross. That's what he's going to get rid of, and he's going to allow the enemies of Israel to do it. God has long since used the enemies of Israel, and he has used them to accomplish his own purposes. He used the Pharaoh. But God uses other nations to judge Israel, and then afterwards, those other nations, because of their ungodliness, are punished. He says, "Two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein." That's what's left, silver. And it's going to be refined in the Negev wilderness for some 3.5 years after the woman, Israel, is driven into the Negev. That will happen, I believe, within the next 6 years. And I will bring the third part through the fire. This is the fire of refinement that he's talking about back in Isaiah 1:25. And will refine them as silver is refined. This is when the two-thirds, the dross, the worthless part of it is taken away. This is when all the lead is melted out of it, the part that's not valuable. And will try them as gold is tried. Now here, instead of using silver, he uses gold. Same process is used in gold. You melt it down, and as you melt it, the impurities, the other elements, come out. God uses gold and silver over and over again to picture as an illustration the way that he intends to purify Israel. Now, here is when the remnant is left in the Negev. We're toward the end of the tribulation period, and they have been purified. They have turned to their God. The dross has been eliminated. The lead has been eliminated. And here's what happens. And we'll try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. The remnant, the silver, the gold. I will say it is my people, and they shall say the Lord is my God. Now, within the next 6 years, and that's, I'm just going to go with that and say in the next 6 years. I don't know exactly when. I personally believe it'll be soon, but I'm going to say within the next 6 years to be sure. You're going to see this attack, and there are going to be a lot of things that happen in between now and then. Russia has just made a $40 billion agreement with Saddam Hussein in Iraq to carry out all sorts of different types of industrial and technology refinements. And Saddam Hussein is going to be replaced. But the important thing is not whether he's replaced or not. That's very important. I don't mean that. I mean he should be replaced. But this agreement is a long-standing agreement. And even after Saddam Hussein regime passes, Russia will still be technologically aiding Iraq. Iraq is one of the 10 toes of Daniel's statue. It is one of the nations that will attack Israel along with Syria and Lebanon and Iran and with Morocco and Algeria and Tunisia and Libya and the Palestinians within. So it's one of the 10 toes of Daniel's statue. It's one of the 10 horns of his fourth beast. Now, who is Russia? In the Bible, in the book of Ezekiel, Russia is Magog. Now, Magog is Russia. It says, set thy face against the land of Magog, against the land. Russia is the land of Magog. And say unto the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, at the time that that was written, in about 600 B.C., existed in what we call Syria today. So the Antichrist will arise out of Syria, but one of the 10 toes will be that of Iraq. And right now, there's a long-term agreement with Russia, and Russia, as Magog, is getting things set up. And in the end, at the final battle of Armageddon, Magog will come down to protect its interest, and then the Lord will return. The Lord is my God. Now, here is what's going to happen to the city of Jerusalem when this attack occurs. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. He speaks to Israel, and Jerusalem is in the middle of Israel, in the midst of it. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, all the nations that were known at the time that this was written, and referring to all the nations that represent the descendants of the 6 sons of Keturah by Abraham, the 12 sons of Ishmael, who was Abraham's first son, and the 2 illegitimate sons of Moab and Ammon, who are Jordan. And he will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the remnant ravished, and half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. The word that is used for cut off is karith, and it means utterly, completely cut off, with no hope whatsoever of return. The word that is used for residue is the Hebrew word remnant. And it says, don't worry, even though half of the city is slaughtered and half of it goes into captivity, he said, a remnant will one day return and you will not be forever cut off from the city. Now, notice what he says in Malachi 4:1-3. And let's go back to where he in Isaiah 1:25, he says, and I will turn my hand upon thee and purely purge away thy dross and take away all thy tin. Notice what he says in Malachi 4:1-3. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. It means they'll be burned up. It means they'll be taken out. It means they're the dross. It means they're what's removed. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. What does that mean? It means that those in Israel who will not turn to their God in the Negev, who will not believe the testimony of the two witnesses and the 144,000 Jews that are there, they will be completely and utterly destroyed. There will not be any of their, they will not be able to produce any children because they will be dead. And so he will leave them neither root nor branch, ancestry to go into the millennial reign. Now notice what he says in verse 2. But unto you that fear my name, in the Negev, you're going to separate the dross and the lead from the silver and the gold, the remnant. And it's going to be the fear of the Lord that causes those who do believe to believe. And in the Negev, they will be so afraid, and they will see themselves as being helpless, which is what caused you to be saved. You were saved because you finally realized how helpless you were, and you were afraid to death of hell, and you knew you couldn't save yourself from it, so you came to the Lord. It was the fear of the Lord that is the beginning of wisdom. And they're going to fear the Lord in the Negev. He says, but unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness. The Jews are people who are articulate in wanting to attain righteousness by the law of Moses, by keeping it. And finally, in the Negev wilderness, when they are afraid enough, they will admit to themselves and to God they cannot keep the law, and they will turn to God. Those who do not are the dross. Those who do not are the lead, the tin. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings. And ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. And ye shall tread. Now when it says they'll grow up as calves of the stall, a man who was a good master, who loved his animal husbandry, and he would feed his calves, he would nourish them, he would see that all their needs were provided. And so he's using that as a picture of the way he will deal with Israel in the millennial reign. And the Bible indicates he will feed them both spiritually and physically. And ye shall tread. Now this is what's going to happen to the dross and to the tin, the lead that's removed. And this is what the gold and silver is going to be doing during the millennial reign. And ye shall tread down the wicked. The wicked, in this particular case, are the dross, and the tin are lead. For they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in that day that I shall do this. When you burn wood, the residue that is left is ash. When you refine silver and gold, the residue that is left is dross and lead or tin. In the day that I shall do this, saith the Lord of hosts. Now, what is so really shocking about what I'm saying is this. You're sitting in a church some 2,000 years after the crucifixion of Christ. And here's a little short, fat, dumpy fella standing up here telling you all this. And here you are, and you've driven in, and you're going to go home, and you're going to eat your meal, and you're going to sleep tonight, and you're going to get up tomorrow, and everything is just going to continue as it was. But in the next 6 years, this is going to happen. In the next 6 years, it's going to happen. You say, well, Brother Michael Murray, that's just your opinion. I don't believe that. Well, fine. But it's going to happen. And when it happens, remember, we have got to go through part of this mess, and we might as well gear ourselves and get ready for it. Now, I could just sweet-nose all kind of stuff all over you. You've known me now for 28 years. I'm not that bad a speaker. God's blessed me. I have the ability to interpret God's word by the leadership of His Spirit, and I'm not that bad a speaker, our preacher, our teacher. So I could give you just those parts out of the Bible that are pleasant. I could preach to you salvation by grace, security of the believer, Jesus is coming, and give you assurance of no problem, you're going to be whisked out of here, and so let's just live for Jesus, and let's do this, and let's do this, and let's have this program, let's have that program, let's provide this, let's provide that. Let's turn this into something that when we come to church, we have something that can satisfy the flesh. I could do that, and I could have done that, but I had the Lord to face. And I had a decision to make, and I made it. A lot of people don't understand why I don't go to a lot of different meetings and do a lot of different things with a lot of the ABA. They don't understand it. They say Brother Michael Murray must be an independent. Let me tell you what I learned in the time I was here. And for those of you like the Shipleys and others that are older that have seen what have happened in our churches over the years, they'll probably understand a lot better than some of you do. As a young minister, when I came here, I did everything I knew how to be friendly to all the people in this association. I went to all the national meetings, I went to all the local meetings, I went to all the state meetings. And I tried to be what is expected of me as a model preacher. Am I opposed to the ABA national meeting? No. Am I opposed to the state ABA meeting? No. Am I opposed to the local ABA meeting? No. Do I dislike the preachers that are in them? No. Do I not like the ABA? I like the ABA. Now let me tell you the kind of a life I lead. I get up every morning, work my tail off all day long, go to bed about 1 o'clock every night, trying to get stuff up on the computer that can warn people about what's coming. Trying to work up enough material that wherever I go, I can let people know that, look, you don't have a whole lot of time. My life is a very busy one. So that's one of the reasons I don't have a lot to do with the other churches and the other preachers. It's nothing personal. But let me give you the honest, good reason, because I'm your pastor, you're the flock I pastor. You ought to understand me, and you ought to know why I do the things I do. I remember there was a movie, I think Robert Mitchum was in it, and he was the captain of a destroyer in World War II. And there was a German U-boat captain, and they played a game of cat and mouse, and the name of the movie was In Harm's Way. And the destroyer kept trying to sink the German submarine, and the German submarine kept trying to torpedo the American destroyer. Some of you may remember it. It was called In Harm's Way. Well, let me tell you, when I first started in this work, I guess I got caught up in all that. And when you affiliate and work with other preachers and other churches, you put yourself in harm's way. You say, well, Brother Michael Murray, you ought to get in there and work and just do everything and put yourself in harm's way and do what all the rest of them do. Am I belittling them for doing that? No, I'm not. And I admire those preachers that have the time and the effort to get in there and stay in harm's way. But let me tell you what I'm like. Charlie knows about the merchant marines, don't you, Charlie? You know what I'm talking about the in harm's way, don't you? Well, when I went out there among them, I discovered that when you go out and you associate with the other ABA churches, you're liable to get torpedoed. And if you're not careful, you'll turn into a destroyer and you'll start trying to sink them. And it's just a cat and mouse game. Is there anything wrong with that? Well, I don't suppose so, but I don't like the game. I'll tell you what I did, what I finally came to the conclusion as. You know what an old merchant mariner is, Charlie. When the merchant marines used to take these merchant ships across the Atlantic, at first they didn't have any protection. They didn't have destroyers out there to go after the submarines. You know what they did? They avoided the submarines. They didn't go out and try to sink them. They tried to defend themselves, but they tried to plan their route where they would avoid where the German submarines were being reported. They stayed out of harm's way. That's what they did. I'm a merchant mariner. I stay out of harm's way. So if you're wondering why I don't go over and fellowship all the time with Victory Church, with Shiloh Church, and with Russellville Church, I stay out of harm's way. There's been a lot of torpedoes sent out over there. There's been a lot of preachers sunk. There's been a lot of agony, a lot of heartache. I stay out of harm's way. Local association meetings, you get all the latest dirt that everybody's got to put out. You may get torpedoed. I'm not a destroyer. I don't go after submarines. I leave submarines alone. And that way I don't get torpedoed. Now, what I'm saying is, I'm a defensive preacher. I stay out of harm's way. So that's the reason I don't go to a lot of these ABA meetings. It's because you can get torpedoed. And if you don't believe that, just take a look at the track record of some of the preachers in our work that have been torpedoed. And sometimes it's been by other preachers. So here's the summation of what I just said. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I certainly didn't plan it. Here's the summation of what I have to say. I stay out of harm's way. That's the only reason. I don't have time to get involved in all the little petty arguments and disagreements that occur between churches. And believe me, every church has a different personality. That's why at least once a year I tell people in this church, if you're dissatisfied here, if you're unhappy here, if you don't feel at home here, if you don't like the other members of the church, if you can't stand me, if you don't like my teaching and preaching, and you feel that you're just not accomplishing anything here, please go over to Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church. Because I think Eddie Rogers is the finest pastor over there. And I think that's a wonderful, fine church. But I don't go over there because I try to stay out of harm's way. Well, what about the other two churches? Well, I just happen to think Shiloh is the best of the three, and that's why I recommend people go over there. But the other two churches, no, they've had nothing but trouble over there on that side of the river. So I stay out of harm's way. If you stay out of harm's way, you're not going to get torpedoed. If you get in harm's way, you're liable to get sunk. So after having said all that, we'll go back to what I should have stayed on and not chase that wild rabbit. Okay, Isaiah 1:26. Now notice we started off in Isaiah 1:25. Then he tells what's going to happen after he gets rid of the dross. Isaiah 1:25. And I will turn my hand upon thee and purely purge away thy dross and take away all thy sin. Now look what he says is going to happen next in 1:26. After he does that, after the tribulation period is over, after it's finished. Now that's the bad stuff I just gave you. Here's the good stuff. And here's what I'm waiting for after the tribulation period ends. And I will restore thy judges as at the first, and thy counselors as at the beginning. He says, just like it used to be when you were my people and I was your God. This is when the millennial reign comes in. This is where Israel is restored as the nation. This is where they come up out of the Negev wilderness where they have been driven. This is where they come back and take the city of Jerusalem and go all the way north to Hamath in Syria, all the way to the Euphrates River, the land of Nimrod. This is when they become the most dominant nation on the earth. This is when Christ rules over a material kingdom that they're in and over a spiritual kingdom that we're in. Here's what happens. Isaiah 1:26. I'll restore thy judges as at the first and thy counselors at the beginning. Afterward, thou shalt be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city. And I want to be there. And I think I will be there. And I want to see this happen. I'll be in a glorified body. I'll get to see it. What is this city of righteousness, the faithful city? Let's take a look at Ezekiel 39:26-29. And after they have borne their shame, and they will bear their shame in the Negev, and all their treasures, trespasses whereby they have transgressed against me, when they dwell safely in their land, and none make them afraid, that's the millennial reign. When I have brought them again from the people all over the world and gathered them out of their enemies' lands and am sanctified in them in the sight of many nations, all the Jews in the millennial reign will go back to Jerusalem. Then shall they know that I am the Lord their God, which caused them to be led into captivity among the heathen. He is the one who caused Titus to come, and the nation and the city of Jerusalem fell. They were carried captivity to all nations until the times of the Gentiles for the city of Jerusalem be fulfilled. But I have gathered them into their own land and have left none of them any more there. Neither will I hide my face any more from them, for I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, saith the Lord God. In the visions of God brought he me. Now we're switching over to Ezekiel 42. We've just gone through Ezekiel 39:26-29. Now let's see about this city up here in Isaiah 1:26. Afterward thou shalt be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city. Take a look at Ezekiel 40:2. In the visions of God brought he me into the land of Israel and set me upon a very high mountain. Look what he says. By which was as the frame of a city on the south. That's the same city right here in Isaiah 1:26. And I'll restore thy judges at the first and thy counselors at the beginning. Afterward thou shalt be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city.
That's the same city in Ezekiel 40 and 2. In the visions of God brought he me into the land of Israel and set me upon a very high mountain by which was as the frame of a city on the south. And in that city there is going to be a temple built. And here it is. Ezekiel 43, 1 through 5. Afterward he brought me to the gate, even the gate that looketh toward the east. And behold, the glory of the Lord, the glory of the God of Israel came from the way of the east, and his voice was like a noise of many waters, and the earth shined with his glory. And it was according to the appearance of the vision which I saw, even according to the vision that I saw when I came to destroy the city, and the visions were like the vision that I saw by the river Kabar, and I fell upon my face. And the glory of the Lord came into the house by the way of the gate, whose prospect is toward the east. So the Spirit took me up and brought me into the inner court, and behold, the glory of the Lord filled the house. Now remember, we started way back here. In Isaiah 1 and 25, and I went through and showed you how they were going to take away the dross, how they were going to take away the lead, how they were going to purify them, how God intended to do it. Then we went through Isaiah 1, 26, where we had the city. Now let's take a look at Isaiah 1, 27, 28. Zion shall be redeemed with judgment and her converts with righteousness. Now the destruction of the transgressors and of the sinners shall be together. That's the elimination of the dross. That's the elimination of the lead or tin. And they that forsake the Lord shall be consumed. And here's the consummation. Here's when it happens. Well, Revelation 19, 20 through 21. And the beast was taken with him, the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them which had received the mark of the beast, and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. And the remnant were slain with the sword of him that sat upon the horse, which sword proceedeth out of his mouth, and all the fowls were filled with their flesh. Well, that's the Sunday school lesson. The bell just rang.